back with a very special episode.
Yes, today we want to do things a bit differently. And we have a guest and a friend at the podcast. This time I'll do it right. Frederik Tarabou.
Hello, that is me.
Is that correct?
It's pretty close. Frederik Tarabou.
close enough.
We're going to explore and talk about indie game dev today, specifically about Frederik's unique journey into the career, the challenges and learnings that he's come across along the way, what a typical day for an indie game dev looks like, and maybe some more interesting topics. But first of all, can you tell us a bit about yourself, Fred, and maybe a little bit about the journey into game development?
So my name is Fred. I'm French, but I'm living in the US. I live in San Francisco. And I did not start to be a game dev. Actually, there was no school for that, so I studied animation in school and worked in movies at DreamWorks for a few years until I realized that what I really wanted to do was making games. So when my job ended, I moved to that career. That was already, like, I guess 8 years ago.
So where did you go to school? Is there a specific school for animation in France?
Yeah, it was called Supinfocom.
And did you notice, like, back in the day, like, what was the animation based on? Digital animation, or was it, maybe I'm a bit out of touch, but was it still like paper keyframe animation, or was it like a lot of?
It was all sepia colored. No, it was 3D animation.
Okay, 3D animation specifically.
Yeah.
So, like, around that time, like, did you play any games, and like, what games did you play?
I played, like, a lot of JRPGs when I was a teenager. So.
All right. So, like,
Valkyrie Profile is probably one of my favorite, Final Fantasy VI. But I mean, I played a bit of everything. I just don't do much car racing or fighting games.
Yeah.
But everything else I've probably played.
But those games, they did inspire you also to do video games, I assume.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's a huge influence. Like, I still, like, even for the games I released, like, a few years ago, I still, like, I kind of keep a list of, like, the influences, I think, of, like, oh, yeah, I think I'm making this way because of that game from 20 years ago.
Oh, that's fun.
So something I've noticed about some of your artwork is your characters usually have a pose or a stance. And it never occurred to me why, but now that I think of it, they kind of look like the initial pose that an enemy would make in, like, a fighting scene and, like,
active idol pose.
We interrupt this program to tell you that there was a cat at Frederick's laptop pulling out cables. We'll be back shortly.
So what inspired you to become a game developer? Was it particularly the games you played, or, like, what were you looking for when you were that young?
When I was a young kid.
Yeah.
I think I remember, like, precisely, like, when I was, like, 6 or 7 years old, my great aunt got us an Atari, Atari ST. And I had my mind blown when I played a game called Turrican with music by Chris Hulsbeck. And I would just, like, launch the game just to listen to the menu music. And I remember playing the game, and at some point I was, like, I don't know, halfway through, like, one of the first levels, and I realized, like, whoa, where was I? I was, like, so much immersed in the character that I had lost the real world, and I felt like I was the character doing heroic stuff. And at that moment I was like, damn, games are cool. And I wanted to make them. Because, I mean, when I first got games, like, I didn't even want to play them because I would let my dad play them because I didn't want to fall into the lava and die. I was too scared. So there's, like, a jump from not wanting to touch the joystick to being fully immersed and enjoying it. And I think that's around then I was like, oh yeah, like, I want to do art in games, basically.
I think it's kind of, it speaks for, like, your creativity, I think, that you, from such a probably simple game from Atari, you could, like, get sucked in, right?
I wonder, was it rare back then to do, like, if it's the only thing that you've known?
Yeah.
You get immersed in whatever. Like, for me, pixel art is, like, maybe, I guess pixel art is, like, super immersive for me because my mind just fills the gap.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like you have those old games, they always have like very realistic covers so that you picture a character like real, yeah. And then you play the tiny version in the game, like, oh yeah, but you still see the character from the cover in your head. Like, it's like books, like you always fill the gaps. And
yeah, but I think...
Like you can be immersed in a book in the same way, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think like, again, it does speak like for your creative mind that you can fill in those blanks. And also like, there's such a difference in like games right now where they're like hyper realistic and you kind of lose that creative like feeling in you do.
Yeah, that's something I talk about with friends, and I have an issue with that. Like we try to show too much nowadays, not just like in like realistic games. I'm trying to make everything right. So like, if it's not exactly how you want to see it, I feel like, oh sure, it looks realistic, but like I don't know, it doesn't like tickle my sense of fantasy. It's like, oh cool, yeah, it's well. It's technically really impressive, but it doesn't make me dream. And I have the same thing with like horror movies where like we used to have a lot of careful cat, don't this kind of stuff. Where we like we used to have horror movies with like not much effects capacity. So like we had to like just like hide stuff or like let people imagine, and now we have 3D showing everything, but I feel like it kinda loses some of the magic.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I remember when I was a young boy, the games I played were definitely not as high fidelity as they are now, but there was something about the lack of detail. I recently bought Diablo 2 Remastered, and so they've remodeled everything from the original models. So they actually found the 3D models from Diablo 2, and Diablo 2 is a sprite-based game, but the sprites were made from 3D models. What was interesting is I looked at the new graphics, and even though they were really pretty, it's really awkward to say maybe, but like the women are less hot. Like they're not as sexual. When I was younger, I was like, wow, that blacksmith, Charcy, I don't know.
You had a crush on her?
Yeah, I had a crush on her, but it was only based on her voice and like 5 pixels of her face. You know, like I couldn't see exactly what she looked like. But now that we have such high fidelity and I can zoom in on her face, I'm like, ooh, that's what you look like? I'm sorry.
I don't know if we should judge the hotness of characters, but yeah, like as in like you're able to like make it exactly in a way that you liked in your head.
Exactly. I think that like the part where you fill it in and make it something more fantastical or more pretty, more special, that you lack that or you miss that nowadays because everything is such high fidelity, you can't fill in the gaps anymore.
Yeah, and I also think like by filling in those gaps, you get more immersed into like, you know, the area or the game. Like it keeps your brain going.
I mean, the truth is that all journeys, like all those fantasy stuff, like they're very personal. Like, if we show everything, we're showing someone's vision. Like, if it's super detailed, we're showing the art director's vision of that world and not your own anymore. When it's like, when it's like vague and actually things to be imagined, like you're leaving agency to the reader or player to like create their own version that's optimal. And which is why like adapting a book to a movie is really hard, because you're trying to like put a voice and an image on things that people created for themselves. So you can never have
a perfect, that's a good analogy.
Perfect result.
Are there any things you've come across in your journey into becoming an indie game developer where you were like, I would do that differently?
Specific towards how I'm making games or how I got there?
I would say how you got there at first, because so you started out as an animator, a 3D animator.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, there's things I would have loved to do differently. So like I grew up using something called Games Factory. By ClickTeam, and it was a great software to just like not code, because it's like a mouse interface and you create nodes and stuff, and it was great to like get things done quickly, and it's still fun to do prototypes with it. It's very fast, and in fact right now I'm making a little side game just for fun, and I'm still using like a newer version of that, like I don't know, 25 years later the company is still alive and still making stuff. But I wish that when I was like a teenager, I had moved to something like Game Maker, where it had actual like a coding, like a full code access.
Yeah.
Because I think getting staying into that comfortable zone of just doing node stuff didn't allow me to learn key stuff about coding that would have been useful later. So that's one thing I would have done differently, just like forcing younger me to like take more risk and doing more painful stuff, because I hate coding.
do you still hate it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course. People, yeah. Coders have tried many times to teach me or to show me, like, see, it's easy. And just like, I just don't have this kind of brain. My brain is chaos. I can't do like organized stuff. I can make doodles and stuff, and I can make things kind of work in a janky way in code, but I'm never going to be well organized for these kind of things. Which is why like, the game I made and released like in 21, Badbergen, I started it solo for like a year and a half, wanting to, it started as a project to learn coding. So I was taking a course online to like learn how to code. And as I was following the course, I was changing the sprites to something else than what they were showing. And that's how I just created Badbergen. It's like, oh, instead of a space guy, I'm going to make a Conan-like character. Mm-hmm. Oh, I need to make a source of light. Well, instead of just being on the hero, I'm going to make it on a bat following the character. And it's the character's friend. He's like this magic bat. That's like it was just created as like elements as I was following this tutorial.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a year and a half, I was doing all the code myself, and it was hell. So like the only reason Batman got made was because I got a friend coder to join to actually do good code for the two two last years of the project.
Was there a part of the game, a part of the code where you were like, you knew exactly what you wanted to achieve, but you couldn't get there with your skill?
I mean, overall, I had a pretty clear design vision of the game, and I could not achieve 95% of it.
Okay.
I mean, like, some of the key stuff I can't do is, like, boring stuff, like managing saves or managing memory, like, the technical stuff I don't know how to do. I'm not too bad at doing stuff like fake AI. Like, the first couple boss fights, I coded them. And like the first boss, which is a giant blob, like I've had people be like, oh man, the blob is so smart, always knows where I'm going to go. And it's like, now that it's just random, like it's just like it chooses like three or four random moves, but I designed them in a way that makes you think it knows where you're going, because it just checks at your distance on a very simple parameter, and it can either do a rush or a big jump or a short jump, and like it kind of tricks heroes easily with simple moves, but it's just because I designed it in a way that tricks players. So I can do stuff like that, and I'm pretty happy with that, but like all the more complex stuff, I wish I could do them, but I can't.
Okay, I noticed in Badbergen you have a lot of lighting effects. So there's like some shadows, some lighting. Was that all done before you had your friend help you, or did you do that yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that part's pretty easy because the game is done with Unity. So like the engine manages a lot of stuff. I did all the lighting in the game, so that's not like we use some Bloom post-processing from just part of Unity, and I just put a lot of like, I use a lot of point lights, but yeah, I managed that myself. I use a bit too much, so like it took a while to like optimize for Switch. Switch did not like all the lights.
Okay. Yeah, how was that process actually? On what platforms did you release the game?
It's on like pretty much everything. It's on PC, Switch, PS, PlayStation 4 and 5, Xbox. Yeah, we did not do Mac because it was kind of a pain to do, and we didn't have enough people playing there.
Using Unity probably helped a lot, right? With publishing for all those platforms. Yeah.
It helps a lot with porting. Still took like a couple months to do Switch.
Yeah, I mean, the Switch is probably so limited that you have to adjust a lot.
Well, yeah, we had to like bake a lot of the environment.
Yeah.
It's still good for PC to have done this optimization pass, because like lower end PCs could probably like slow down when there's too many effects. Because like near the end of the game, it's more like a bullet hell. And when they all have their own light or... I had to like, at first they all had their own light, and then I had to like make versions like, oh yeah, no, they are just self-illuminated, but they don't actually use real lighting. I had to optimize my mess a little bit. And yeah, no, it works pretty fine.
So I'm curious, did you like thought out the whole project beforehand, or was it like a ongoing process and you kind of, you know, were adding new things and like thinking of new stuff to do?
The way I design my stuff is I have like all the, usually I have all the broad story. I have the key characters, I have like the general regions. But then when it comes to details, a lot of that I have to come up as I make the game. And I did a weird thing for this one where like I built the game chronologically in a way, like I built the first area first and then the last area last. But that's not really a good way to do things, because you're so much better at building stuff by the end that you want to review the earlier areas.
Yeah.
And the first area is super important because that's where you teach the players everything. So like it should be, you should master the game development when like you're teaching everyone who's gonna play how to do it. But we still were able to solve those issues with a lot of playtesting. But the way I was doing was that I would like, yeah, work on one region, get the tile set and art, and have some of the monsters already. I had some ideas for monsters for some parts, but I would still have to come up with, oh, we're playing the game, now we're missing, we're not challenging the player on these kind of problems, we need to fix that by adding a new monster that requires you to use this item because people are not using it. So we would do like a mix of playtesting and from other players and ourselves to see what was lacking to like adapt the game design. And I will usually just like work on like dialogues when I got to that point, like, oh, we're at this point of a game, I need to write those dialogues. Like the thing when you're wearing so many hats as an indie game, it's kind of hard to like have it's not like if you had a writer on the team, they probably would have written a bunch of like key elements of the games ahead of time. But like since I was doing all the art and animations, level design and writing and world building and managing marketing at the same time, and just like, okay, I'll do it when it's needed.
Yeah.
Just try to keep going.
Is there a part of the process that you enjoy the most that you didn't expect?
Probably, I mean, it was my first time doing writing dialogues. I've written comics before. So there's some dialogues in comics, but like, yeah, like writing the dialogues between characters in a game was a lot of fun. Because that's where I got to get silly, like trying to add humor to the game. The game can be dark at times with spoiler alert, like some like NPCs can die depending on your choice and stuff like that. So like you can experience loss, but like I added levity in humor in the dialogue. That was a good way to balance things for me. That was a lot of fun to do, and it was a good break from being on the computer, because dialogues, I could write them on paper. So I was able to get out of the screen a bit when doing writing. That was a good break.
So I'm curious, like, because you did like almost everything, like how do you balance that properly? Like how do you prioritize that? I mean, I can imagine that you might want to be, oh, I like doing the animations right now, but maybe something else has to be done first. Like how do you kind of, you know, decide that order? Or is it a feeling, or do you have like a structure, like this has to be done before I do this?
Usually the best way to prioritize things was when my friend and coder yelled at me that something was missing. He didn't yell so much, but like he would like, he said, hey, we need this thing, and I would fix that. But overall, well, I don't know, I did it pretty organically. Like I think I did it in a way that was fun for me, hopefully for Fletcher, my friend coder on that. It was fun for both of us to just like, yeah, we're adding stuff as we just like building blocks like a Lego, rather than having a super clean, like we didn't have a producer, so we didn't have a super clean, okay, building this in this order is the most efficient.
Yeah.
So we made things as we went, and it was not the most efficient way, which is part of why the project took way longer than needed probably. But I was just like changing hat as things were like needed. So like I would get an email from like, oh, we need, they want this information. When we had a publisher, we need to deliver some milestones. So like sometimes they would like ask us stuff like, okay, I would manage marketing that day, or our composers would send something, so then I would have to be like, oh, I guess for the next couple of hours I'm going to listen and give feedback. Like, things would come to me and interrupt my day tasks. So even though I was like, oh, today I'm doing an admission, I'd be like, oh, no, I guess I'm doing feedback. Or this thing broke, I guess I'm going to like talk with a programmer to see if we're trying to do things a different way than what we have planned, because it's not working as intended. Like, we would always adapt on what we had to do, and just figuring out on the way.
That's cool. How about, since we're talking about the balance of, you know, development and other things, like, how would your typical day during development look like? Was there a typical day, or was it just all chaos?
It was a typical day. Like, I think one thing we did good, part of why the game took 4 years instead of two still, but we never did insane hours. Like, a lot of indies, they like work day and night, and I just can't do that. So we kept, I think, like normal work days through the whole process, which avoided us from burning out during the production. And just like, yeah, it took longer, and sometimes we were like really close to being completely out of money. We could not keep everyone on the team. When we had the first publisher, and then we lost them, and we had to like lose a couple of friends who are working on the project because we could not pay them anymore. So this kind of thing sucks. But we kept a normal schedule for the whole time, just like trying to keep a balanced life.
I feel like that's something that is really hard, like, let alone for indie developers, but big companies make this mistake, or maybe they plan it. I'm not sure, but a lot of companies have this situation where at the end of the process of development, they have a crunch time and everybody gets overworked. Nobody has fun. And the end product, you can sense the end product is lacking in quality, or some kind of, you know, you can tell it's not done passionately anymore. I feel like once you figure out a technique almost to keep yourself sane, by maybe balancing out your work and life, like other life aspects. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long did it take you to make the game? 4 years, right?
About 4 years. Because, like, yeah, the first year and a half was me solo. So that was way slower because, you know, doing all the art and the code at the same time was too much, especially as I was learning. And also at that time, we were doing something interesting. That's actually a cool part of the process of how we made the game, is that me and my friend Fletcher, he was making his own game. And when I started struggling with code, like we talked and we came up to this solution where, like, I would do art for his game, he would do code for my game. So we would trade skills without paying each other. We're just like, hey, we don't have money, but we both know how to do different things. So let's just help each other. So like, we'd go work in a cafe. I would work on my game for like part of the time, and then we'd both trade for like, I don't know, maybe like 1 week every month or 2 weeks every month. We're like, hey, okay, now you work on my game, now I work on your game. And he would quickly code a bunch of things that I needed, and I would quickly do a bunch of art that he needed. So we did this for like a year, where we traded skills, and that was really fun, because that made me take a break from my project and work on a different style. Like, his game was like cyberpunk. So I would leave fantasy and do some sci-fi stuff for a little bit, and then come back to my project with like new ideas.
Yeah, exactly. I assume that working on another project kind of ignited ideas in your project, and also your project probably, you know, created some ideas for his project.
Yeah. That was something that I actually wanted to, like, oh, we should do a GDC talk about that, because like, I haven't heard people do this thing, but I thought that with the right person, it can work really well.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you don't have to pay. As an artist, it's really hard to pay an engineer. They're pretty expensive. So it might be easier for an engineer to hire an artist to just do their thing. But when both people don't have money, that was a very convenient solution.
Yeah.
It's a creative solution for a very tricky situation for both of you. And did Fletcher, your
colleague, girlfriend.
Yeah. Did he finish his project first?
I finished the art on his project, and he did not finish it because I got a publisher on Barbarian and they paid us money. So we were like, oh, okay, let's we're gonna finish Fully Barbarian while we're being paid, because now there's like milestones and deadlines. And he accepted to just like, leave his project on the side while we did that. And that's why it's kind of sucky, because it took much longer than we thought. Like, oh, okay, in 6 months, a year, we can finish Barbarian. But it took like 2 years and something to actually get it done, just because I was too ambitious. It's a full Metroidvania, and I wanted like some cool twist and whatnot, and it ended up being like, it's probably like, you can play this game, it's like a 15 to 25 hours long game, which is quite a lot more than most pixel art Metroidvania. I think most people expect, like, they see the game, they expect probably like a 6 to 8 hour game, but it's pretty massive thing. And that's with me cutting like 30% of the content I have originally planned, which is a good thing I cut stuff, because the game is long enough.
Did you accomplish what you wanted with the game? Or were there things you, like, did you have to kill your darlings and you were like, if this was in the game, it would have been way better, it missed this part?
I accomplished most of the stuff I wanted. It's not perfect, but like the things I would have liked to fix are more about pacing and difficulty. The game overall is too hard, and it gets to the right difficulty for people once you activate accessibility options. Like, we have a bunch of options to make the game easier. Mm-hmm. It's just that they are optional. So I wish we had them implemented as like the default. Like, I wish we had like, oh, those options are how you start the game with, and you can turn them off to play in hard mode. So that's some of the things I would have liked to change. But in terms of like how big the game is, how we tell the stories, the bad guys, like I got the stuff I wanted in. Like,
that's nice. I think that was basically your first real published game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge achievement if you can get what you want out of it, especially your personal achievements of, you know, getting the story out, getting some of your creative art out.
And being paid to do it was pretty great.
That also helps, yeah.
People, like, there's a lot of talk about whether taking a publisher or not is good, and there's a lot to say about that. Like, publishers can be really greedy. They can take they'll take usually all the sales profit until they recoup. So you won't see any money when the game comes out, and you need to plan for that.
Yeah.
Because you might get dry at that point. Like, the publisher will stop paying you and you won't see money from release. So that part can be pretty tough. But when they pay you, it's kind of like they're paying you sales before you get the sales. So it's not like you're losing money on the sales, it's just you're getting it ahead of time. And I found that to be super useful and a great peace of mind for me to get to work on my love project and having a salary that's stable while doing that. Because the first part before getting a publisher, when I was working on it solo and just eating from my savings, like I remember at some point I got a nightmare, like where I had a dream where I was looking at my bank account and it was empty. And I was like, oh no, all my money is gone. I used all my money to make the game. And then I woke up and I was like, I checked my bank account and it was still there. And I was like, I couldn't remember which one was the truth. It was the dream or not.
He swapped.
And I was like, oh my God, I still have I still have a bit of time. But like having a publisher that paid me, like, that was such a relief.
Yeah.
To not have to worry about that too much anymore. Because I did reach a point at a time where, like, I did, my bank account did reach pretty much zero. Like my nightmare did become reality and it was not fun. So I'm really glad I was able to get that.
The publisher didn't like interfere anything, like didn't interfere with your game, like your vision?
We had two publishers. The first one wanted to check more in details, and then when they saw that the marketing was that this kind of game did not sell as much after doing a survey, they were like, oh, we're out. And we had some struggle to get the money we were owed for a while. But we eventually did get most of what we wanted. And then the second publisher was just super nice and all, just like, oh, like, hands off, like, yeah, do what you want. And they help with translation. And they're still doing localization. Like, if we do like a year and was it a year ago, I did like an update where I added a bonus dungeon to the game with some new text, and they still did the localization.
Nice.
For it.
Yeah.
It just adds like recoup cost, but like they don't charge us or anything. Like the fact that they still support a game that did not sell like crazy is really nice. A lot of publishers, when you release the game, if you do really well, they pay for some stuff for you to add more things. But if you didn't, if you are not a big success, they're just like, yeah, no, we're not spending any more money or time with you guys.
Yeah.
Like we're done. So they actually are a publisher who care about indies and want to make sure that they're treated well. So that was a great experience for that.
Yeah, because that's also a risk with publishers, right? That they might interfere or like they say like, hey, we want this game to be more like this because that sells better. So, you know, you should make that.
Yeah, totally. That can happen. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how common, what problem is more common, but... Yeah, sometimes they want to interfere with a view, or sometimes they just cancel the whole project because they don't want to fund it anymore. Like, just all kind of stuff can happen. That's very scary.
Yeah.
And also these days, this year, it's like a bit different. It's more like it's really hard to get a publisher to sign anything because with the layoffs and the industry and the economy, it's just like there's not much money.
Yeah, they're taking less risk.
I had a question about your art in your games, because you did most of the art, or probably all of the art, for Batbarian. Also, you have a background in 3D animation, and for the game you've made a lot of animation in 2D, and specifically in pixel art. How is your creative process in making art for games, and what does your 3D animation background, how does that translate to a 2D animation game?
Oh, the background is like, yeah, so far in my life now. My process overall is, my main process is listening to music for any art I make. Like, get on a car ride or a train, listen to music, and then I write a game, get ideas, and visualize the creatures. So that's where I get my ideas. And then I draw them usually directly, like, on sprites in pixel art. I don't do much concept on paper, at least not for pixel art. My 3D background, I think that when I was doing 3D, I was doing textures at DreamWorks. So that's the thing I kept the most, rather than what I learned in school about animating. I didn't do animation at DreamWorks. So usually it's more like when I'll be painting stone, I'll be thinking more about the texture quality of it and how it takes light, because that's what I was doing for 7 years at DreamWorks, and that's what stayed with me the most.
And what software do you make your 2D pixel art?
I use Asprite, Asprite.
All right. Does it have tweening? Does it have any kind of animation? Like interfaces, or do you have to do everything with keyframes?
Keyframes. It has, you know, onion skin. You can really easily create new stuff. You can like have reference layers, multiple layers, changing opacity and all that. And it just has a great UI. Like it's, I think my speed for making animation like doubled when I started using Asprite. It's really great.
But you don't have any kind of bones or skeletons you have to manipulate?
No, it's all hand animated. Yeah.
Okay. But that's not even an option in the software, right? That's interesting. Yeah, because especially coming from a 3D animation background, I would expect you to maybe seek that out for 2D animation. But
I always loved hand animation.
Yeah, it has a different style, right?
Yeah. I never cared that much about 3D. If you remember, like, I got into the 3D school because I wanted to make games, but the games I was playing were 2D. Just like, oh, I guess that's the one school where I get to be on a computer for entertainment. But 3D itself was never my interest.
Yeah, I think we have a bit of time left for a few more topics, but I was curious about your current projects or upcoming projects. Can you share anything about the game you're working on?
Yeah, so the new game is not my creation, so it's not even going to be under my company. It's a game by my friend Brad, And he had taken a break from being indie for like 7 years, I think. Even he hit me up one day, 3 years ago, like, hey, do you want to make art on my new game? I was like, oh yeah, didn't know you were making games again. And it's called Demon's Mirror, and it's a deck builder. You can wishlist it on Steam already. We don't have a set release date, but we're hoping for later this year. That's the goal. It's not pixel art. This time I'm also doing art direction and some and design writing with Brad. He's actually doing the animation. It's his first time doing animation ever. He's a coder, but like he's doing awesome on animation. And this one is using Bond, like, you know, like it's using the Unity animation system, which makes some really cool stuff. You can make almost 3D effects, like things rotating, kind of like it's pretty neat. And yeah, so it's like fantasy themed. You can play as three different characters. We all have different decks, obviously. Like if you've played over deck builders, it's in the same line of that. But the twist is that we also have on the side, we have a board where you can chain tiles. Like, you know, like the old games, like Bejeweled, like old Bejeweled, chain boards. But like you use those to like either power your cards or your cards can power up your board, and you have to manage both. So it's interesting because the board tiling thing is usually linked to more casual games, but we're taking it to make a game that's more complex than usual deck builders, and deck builders are already pretty complex. So we're taking a casual mechanic to and mixing it with like a strategy game to make a like double management game mechanic. So yeah, the game is pretty tactical and strategic, and we're excited for people to play it more. We've had like a private play test that went pretty well. So
that's nice.
We're still finishing up the design. And, yeah.
Demon's Mirror on Steam. I've already wishlisted it.
Yeah, I guess it's coming soon. It's the official term.
Somewhere in the future.
When finished.
Should add a trademark icon next to that.
Coming soon, TM.
Yep. Yeah, I was wondering about your personal goals as a developer or game developer, because other projects or kind of different kind of things you want to achieve in your life as a game developer, and are you working towards those?
Sorry, can you repeat the question? I didn't get that.
Yeah. So your personal goals and career goals, I guess, do you have any other dreams or things you want to achieve that you're working on right now?
I mean, I have a lot of goals. I have like 10 project ideas I want to make as games, but like I have a dream project from when I was like a teenager that I wrote on a little notebook. I wish I could make it, but it's like an insane full RPG. Like, you know, like I said, I was playing JRPG back then, and I would love to make one of those, but like those are like super ambitious and major. So I think my main goal is there's like two or three games I would like to make, and one of them would be like a bigger RPG, and I would love to make a co-op game, like something to play with people, because like Bad Berrian and Demon's Mirror, they're both single player.
Yeah.
And it was super fun when I was a kid to play with my brother, so I would love to like create something like that, that you get to play with people.
Are there any other things you would tell your old self? Well, we've talked about that, but maybe if people are becoming interested in game development at a young age, is there any advice you would give them other than, you know, try to do the more complex things?
I mean, the first thing, like, to be real is that it's very hard. Like, making games is not as easy as playing games. There's often, like, this misconception when you tell people, like, oh, yeah, I'm a game developer. Like, oh, you get to play games all day. Like, no, I suffer day and night. it's just a lot of work and a lot of hats to wear. What I would say is, like, start small. Like, it's really hard to keep a small scope. I think it's really good. It's really hard to find good teammates. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, it's like dating. Like finding someone you can work with 8 hours a day, it's not always easy. You need someone you get along who has similar goals sometimes, or where you communicate the same way. So I recommend doing like a bunch of game jams with different people, like make like a team and work together for one weekend on a game for fun, try a bunch of different things, make a bunch of prototypes. Don't like go in a full project on one idea right away. Try a few small things and they might all look interesting, but maybe one of them is going to stick more than the others, and try to keep them at a smaller scope. Like, okay, let's try to make a game in 1 or 2 months.
Yeah.
Not 1 year or 2 years. Like, just like really small things. And if it seems like it's taking too long, like maybe it's not the right project for now. Like, you can mess with multiple prototypes at the same time. That's okay. You don't have to like tell yourself that this is your magnus opus. Like, it's easy to like get stuck on an idea that you are dreaming about and get too much attached to it. And before you know it, it's been years before you get to do something else and you burn yourself out. So work with a bunch of people, do game jams. Game jams are super fun. Whenever I do a game jam, I make things much faster. Like, adrenaline from like having that deadline, a theme, working with new people, like things get done super quickly and it's really exciting. It's a great way to get to know if you can work with certain people and to try new ideas.
And it's a good way to make new friends, right?
Or enemies, yeah.
Enemies? All right. Well, maybe that's for another episode, talking about how you made enemies.
How to make enemies in games, yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for today.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
We'll be looking forward to your game, Demon's Mirror.
We'll link it in the description, of course.
To be honest, I'm kind of a little bit jealous. I've always wanted to make games, and
You've made some games.
I've made some like tiny games just for experimenting, and I think I have some visions that could actually translate to making real games. But you know, as you said, making actual games is a lot of hard work, and I'm very lazy.
You get to do stuff. I think it's fine if you're making small games, they still count.
I guess they do, but nobody's playing them, so right now.
Oh, I mean, nobody's playing my games either. That's a different story.
All right. It was a very interesting and, you know, yeah, there's an interesting insight. Like, a lot of people play games, but they don't really think about development, right? It's just they play it and they don't, that's it. Like, it goes out of your brain.
Yeah, it's a different world for sure.
Yep.
But yeah, that was a pleasure to talk to you too.
So thank you once again for listening to today's episode. We'll maybe be having another episode if Fred is up for it in his busy schedule. But for now, I'll see you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.